This is a coastal story, written and presented by Charlie Connolly. It was just another Thursday night for Harriet Harton. With her husband upstairs in bed, riddled with tuberculosis, it had fallen to the 43-year-old to run the Jolly Fisherman pub on Market Street in Brighton. She enjoyed it too. She liked the customers, as a rule. There was the occasional drunk who needed removing, but generally it was a home from home to a pleasant collection of misfits. She knew the market costermongers by name, listened to the sailors' tall tales, lent an understanding ear to the lonely, and humoured the eccentric. The 1st of February 1866 was a quiet Thursday night, just a couple of regulars. At 10:30, she even thought about closing up early. As she walked across the bar to collect a couple of empty pint pots, she thought she'd bolt the door on the way back. When, with a clack and a creak, the door opened. Her heart sank a little. She wouldn't be closing early after all. Then she saw who was standing there. John William Lee, married to her younger sister Mary, and pointing a revolver at her. Harriet turned to run, and he fired, the bullet entering her side as she made for the steps of the cellar. Lee fired again, hitting her in the back and sending her sprawling onto the top of the cellar stairs, crying out, "I am killed! I am killed!" Without a word, Lee nodded to himself, lowered the gun, turned round, and walked out into the street. One of the regulars, George Loveday, helped Harriet up and to a chair, while someone else ran for the doctor. When he came, it was clear there was nothing really he could do. Harriet lingered until the following afternoon, and then was gone. Lee walked calmly a short way down Market Street and stood against the wall of a hotel, casually hefting the weight of the gun in his hand. People drawn into the street by the commotion kept a wary distance. A police inspector named Isaiah Barden arrived, and after a brief struggle, during which a shot was fired, Lee was overpowered and carried off to the police station. To this day, nobody knows why John William Lee shot and killed his sister-in-law. There was talk that he'd lent the Hartons a large sum of money, but that wasn't true. 6 months earlier, he'd been imprisoned for bankruptcy, barely 4 months after taking over a pub in Brentford. It was then that Mary left him and travelled to Brighton to stay with her sister. In Brentford, where he ran the Georgian Dragon, they'd called him Mad Lee. He'd close the pub at lunchtime, then return at night, roaring drunk with some of the town's roughest characters. He put out placards advertising himself as The Cure and performed strange songs and dances in the bar. He'd walk the streets in boots so long they were up to his hips and wear ostentatious jewellery. He lived on brandy and the occasional handful of gooseberries washed down with vinegar. At one point, he had a horse living in the bar. Lee had arrived back in Brighton 2 days before the murder, but Harriet had refused to let him into the building as long as her sister was there. From behind the door, she called him a pirate, a thief, a murderer, and told him to leave her sister alone. Yet on the day he killed Harriet, Lee and Mary appeared to have reconciled. That evening they drank stout together in the Marine Hotel opposite the Jolly Fisherman, and Lee seemed in good spirits when he stood up, told Mary he'd be back in a moment, walked across the road, entered the Jolly Fisherman, and calmly murdered Harriet Harton. At his trial, the jury found Lee guilty in a matter of moments. The judge passed the mandatory death sentence, and 26-year-old John William Lee was hanged at Lewis Jail on the 10th of April, 1866. Still, with nobody any the wiser as to why he'd killed Harriet Harton. As he awaited his execution, Lee was visited in prison by a clergyman, to whom he told his remarkable life story. So here, a century and a half on, is the tale of the murderer John William Lee, in his own words. I am now 26 years old. I am of illegitimate birth, which, being of a sensitive disposition, has exercised upon me malign influence throughout my life. I was nursed, if not born, in London. Between 6 and 7 years old, I was taken to Brighton by a lady married to my father. I was placed at grammar school for a while, but at 8 years old ran away, begging for about a week, until brought back by a policeman. I wanted to go to sea. After some months, I was sent back to London, but led such a life that I had to return to Brighton again. I could then boast of being the best fighter and the most mischievous, most artful and the most expert thief of any child of my age. I was now taken in hand by one, the remembrance of whose gentle kindness and my profligate and ungrateful conduct in return has caused me many gloomy thoughts and many a scalding tear. May God forgive me. She endeavoured every Christian and kind effort to kill the weeds that had been sown in my young heart. At 13 I left school and would not go again, being determined upon the sea. I was put on board a collier to sicken me of it, but it only increased my liking for it still more, even when I was nearly wrecked with other colliers on a voyage in the winter of 1853. I was soon back in Brighton and studied navigation with a private tutor. I was then apprenticed, went out on board a transport with troops to the Crimea, and remained until wrecked in a storm near Balaclava. I was stranded on the wreck 2 days and 3 nights, the Cossacks on shore firing at us and the sea breaking clear over us. I returned home on another vessel and then went on sundry voyages to India, Australia and South America. I finished my apprenticeship. My employers were satisfied with my abilities and I received an excellent character. But morals? They neither knew nor cared anything about morals. And at 19 I found myself as far advanced in vice as I was in my profession. After other voyages, I shipped for Calcutta as a second officer. There, drink began to tell upon me. There was a mutiny on board, and I nearly killed 6 of the mutineers. I was tried for this at Calcutta, but the captain took my part, and I was only fined. I was made chief officer, but was nearly always drunk on brandy and so on. Through the same cause, I lost other good appointments, which I obtained from time to time. I was married to a Spanish girl. I lived with her 9 months at Calcutta, and she followed me to China, and is now I know not where. After sundry voyages as chief officer and captain, I returned once more to England, but spent time at Brighton in drinking, betting, and so on. I had to leave through getting into trouble about some money which did not belong to me. At length I sailed in a Scotch clipper to Hong Kong and then on to China, where we found ourselves confined on board the ship. 4 of us got to shore on a raft and left the clipper behind. I found work abducting sailors from men of war and other vessels into forced work. But, being found out, I had to leave that area in a hurry At Singapore, I managed a sailor's boarding house for some months, then went up the country, joined the Taiping rebels and used to smuggle arms, ammunition, and occasionally men stolen from warships for them. At length, I got so well known that I had to hide myself in Shanghai. And when English marines were sent to take me, I only escaped by getting into one of those large Chinese coffins above ground and lying there with the skeleton while they searched for me. I joined the rebels again. I became a chief among them, leading their troops against the English, the imperialists and the French. I was wounded in the head, the chest and the leg through constant skirmishes, pirating up rivers. I contrived to save enough to buy a vessel of my own for the purpose of pirating and trading the various rivers with arms and ammunition. Once going up the river with a load of arms, the imperialists came out from one of their stations and seized some of our boats and killed some of our men. I then rounded my own boat and opened fire, and in the fight I killed two of their officers. We sailed on, but having to pass another imperialist station, I found the news had arrived of the death of the two officers, along with a description of myself. So, with five of my crew, I took a small boat and crossed the country to Ningpo, often carrying the boat. On arrival, I found that a large reward was offered for my head, dead or alive. I joined a junk and went again pirating up the Yangtze. I was taken prisoner by a band of pirates while defending our boat, but managed to escape. Myself and others afterwards came down the river and went cruising off the coast, but we had to flee, so anxious were we that the pirates might take us again. There were 11 of us banded together, of whom 3 have been executed abroad. I am now to be the 4th. I was once brought to the block myself by the rebels, but an Englishman interfered and got me off, saying I was not the spy they supposed me to be. I returned to England in April 1863, and have been in Brighton mostly since, drinking, gambling, keeping public houses, and for a while I had a photographic establishment. I was married again, here, in Lewes, some 9 or 10 months ago, my former wife being still alive. Then I went to Brentford and kept a public house there, but you know about all my mad doings there, through drink. Half a pint of spirits several times a day and night was my habit. And you know about this sad business here in Brighton, for which I have to suffer. As I said at the end of my trial, I cannot justify this act, but I can account for it. We don't have Harriet Hart in the story. Silence hangs over her, the victim. She didn't have much in life, but looked after her dying husband and tried her best to protect her sister from a dangerous, violent man. She ran the Fisherman's Arms on Market Street in Brighton for her ailing husband, and loved it there. She knew the market costermongers by name, listened to the sailors' tall tales, lent an understanding ear to the lonely, and humoured the eccentric. At 10:30 on Thursday, the 1st of February 1866, she was thinking of closing up early. Just get these couple of empties in, and she'd bolt the door. That was a coastal story. I'm Charlie Connolly. A quick word about the return of one of my favourite podcasts. In the second series of Vanishing Postcards, Evan Stern travels a section of the Mother Road, Route 66, stopping off at the byways and honky-tonks and listening to the remarkable stories of people who live along the famous highway. Evan has a natural warmth, empathy and a willingness to listen that helps to make Vanishing Postcards one of the best listens out there. I'll put a link in the show notes. I enjoyed the first series of Vanishing Postcards so much that I completely fanboyed at Evan. As a result of, or more accurately, despite this, you might hear a familiar voice popping up in the third episode of this new series. Don't forget that if you're enjoying Coastal Stories, it would be a big help if you could hit like on your podcast platform, or even better, leave a review. I've been lucky enough to have some terrific reviews so far, for which I'm hugely grateful. Not only do they inflate my already massive head, they do help to get Coastal Stories noticed with the potential to reach a wider audience. Thanks a million, folks. And here's to Harriet Harton, just one of countless women who've fallen victim to appalling men when they were just living their lives. It happened then, it's still happening now. Remember them.